Tonight on KPFT Local News at 5:30 p.m.
When we were taken as hostages, all the people living in the building, into a small room in the basement of the building.
These stories and more from 90.1 FM, Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. News in a global context from your community, city, state, and region. With your hosts, Tanya Akpabio and Nadia Michelle. This is KPFT Local News at 5:30 p.m.
Good evening and welcome to KPFT Local News at 5:30 p.m. It's Monday, December 26th. I'm KPFT News Co-Director Renee Feltz. Tonight we bring you part one of a special series titled Israel and Palestine, the Human Cost of the Occupation. This week, during the local news time slot, you'll hear the series, which is produced by Pacifica reporter and medical student Seema Jalani. Seema is also a Houston-based reporter with KPFT Local News.
Rarely have two peoples been so similar to each other. I went to Israel and to Palestine in March of 2005 with a group called the Jewish American Medical Project, which is a division of Visions of Peace and Justice with Israel and Palestine. Our delegation consisted of four physicians, a child psychologist, two environmental researchers, an educator, an attorney, and myself as a representative of American medical students and also a media contact for Pacifica Radio. Our goal was not only to provide health care to those in need while working in conjunction with Physicians for Human Rights Israel and the United Palestinian Medical Relief Committees, but also to document the effects of the occupation on both the Israeli and the Palestinian societies and bring those stories back to the United States in an effort to better educate the public here. Dr. Alice Rothschild, co-founder of Visions of Peace and Justice with Israel and Palestine, and an obstetrician-gynecologist at Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates, most recently has focused on peace and justice concerns in Israel and Palestine. Throughout this piece, Dr. Rothschild shares her reflections as she experiences the terrain from a Jewish-American perspective, while I, on the other hand, experienced it as a Muslim-American. I arrived the day after a suicide bombing in Tel Aviv, which killed four people and injured 50. With my American passport in hand, I boarded a plane from London to Tel Aviv surrounded by Jewish Israelis. I suppose I might have fit in and actually felt quite confident until I switched on the news in the airplane and heard more about the suicide bombing. The fear of those boarding the plane was in the air and showed on their petrified faces. Then I got my landing card. It asked me for a great deal of information, like my email address, my father's name, my mother's name, my grandfather's name, and even my religion. I labored over whether to lie about being Muslim. Here I was, a 24-year-old Muslim woman entering a country that essentially hates me on the day after a suicide bombing. I decided not to lie about my faith and took my chances. Even though I nearly had a panic attack on entering the country, I made it through immigration without problems. Departing the country was another story, though, one that involves 2 hours of searches and questioning by the Israeli government officials. Before delving into the political topics of checkpoints, suicide bombings, the separation wall, the refusnik movement, the Gaza Strip, and the Jewish peace movement within Israel, I think it's important to share some tremendous personal stories I gathered in order to get an idea of the intense emotions surrounding the conflict. Director General of the Palestinian Medical Relief Society in Ramallah, Jihad Mashal, tells me about his experience during the incursion and siege of Ramallah.
When we were taken as hostages, all the people living in the building, into a small room in the basement of the building. We were almost 15 adults and 12 children in a room a lot smaller than this one for 5 days. So that has influenced the behavior of my kids, who continued for months after it to sleep in our beds. All together, six of us actually, in one bed. And they continue to think that soldiers are all around. Each moment they go from one room to another and so on. I am a person who knows about these issues and I can deal with more or less with my children. How about 3 million others who experience lots of massive things? Either at checkpoints, or killing of somebody in front of them, or injuring, or arrest. Many things that really affects thinking, behavior, everything. And we need to deal with it.
A Palestinian medical student, who I will call Sophia, tells me about one of her toughest days.
It was my first week on general surgery. So it was like my first day in theater, in the operating room. So I went in with the doctor because he wanted me to come and just, like, for the first time, just observe. It was a bowel resection. It was a young guy, who was hit by the Israeli soldiers in Nablus. He was shot. It was a gunshot. And the bullet, like, it went through his abdomen, through the diaphragm, and went out through the chest wall. It was a very, very bad injury. I happened to be in the operating room where this guy is being operated on. It was a major operation. It took the surgeon 5 hours. I almost fainted, like, it was too much. The funny thing was that day I had to go to Israel-Palestinian meeting in East Jerusalem. It's with a peace organization, and I had to go to this meeting and see the Israelis that day, start discussing stuff, you know, politics, whatever. We have some discussion groups. All these issues are usually opened up. So when I went to this group, I was telling them, listen people, this is what I saw this morning. The moment I saw this, and after I was done, I was thinking, should I come see you or not? Why on earth am I doing this? Why am I coming here and I'm sitting with you and talking with you when I go through this internal conflict early in the morning and then come and, you know, just pretend that everything is okay and sit with Israelis and be friends? So I'm not here to be friends with you. I'm here just to tell you, to let you know what you're doing to me. Inside me, I'm really very, very confused. I had second thoughts about coming, but then I decided to come because I thought it's very important for me and for the group to know that such a thing happened to me today.
The Israeli security enclosure measures consist of checkpoints, partial checkpoints, roadblocks, road gates, earth mounds, earth walls, trenches, and now the separation wall. There are also three types of collective restrictions on the movement of Palestinians, one of which is closure, or total prohibition on Palestinian residents of the occupied territories to enter Israel unless they have a special permit. Siege and curfew are the others, during which residents are completely prohibited from leaving their homes, and there is an army order to open fire on anyone who leaves their home for any reason, be it to get food or to get diapers for children. These restrictions arise from a network of Israeli-only roads, commonly known as Jewish-only roads, and government-sponsored illegal settlements, in addition to the more than 300 checkpoints that are frequently operated in an arbitrary manner. My first checkpoint experience was at the Calandia checkpoint, going from Ramallah to Jerusalem, walking through the lines on foot. I pass the huge concrete blocks and wait in the line full of Palestinians in the morning rush hour. We are all waiting in the heat with the dust and the smell of the exhaust permeating the air. The morning traffic in the West Bank is cluttered along the line to get past checkpoints out of Ramallah. Lines of cars, taxis, and school children all wait to have their documents and their bags, whether they are purses or school backpacks, searched by the Israeli soldiers in the middle of a roadblock. If you are not allowed through, you run the risk of being beaten, arrested, or detained in a pen indefinitely. Many people who live in the West Bank work in East Jerusalem. As a result of this, they go through many checkpoints every day just in order to get to and from work. Some checkpoints are only open during certain times of the day so that Palestinians that want to come back from Jerusalem to Ramallah after 8 p.m. are unable to do so. I find it odd that at the walking checkpoints where I'm face to face with an armed Israeli soldier that is usually in her late 20s, there is no eye contact and there is only gruff speaking with an order for me to show my bag or show my passport. I have never before felt so much like cattle, herded in one direction, all of us waiting, all of us sweating, and all of us scared that we won't even make it through. Next to me, there is an elderly woman with a cane. She is searched through her clothes. On the other side is a professionally dressed woman with short, stylish hair in a dark suit and with a briefcase, which she is forced to open for the teenage Israeli soldier with a gun. One by one, we are cleared and move out of the line into a fenced-in passage entrenched with barbed wire and made of concrete. We pass a shed with an Israeli soldier peeking over the wall, examining me as I walk to the street. Mr. Jihad Marshall again recalls some instances where he has personally felt the power of checkpoints.
She has to go frequently for dialysis. She was denied access from her village to Nablus itself. So she has to go all around, spending more than 12 hours in her journey. But when she arrived to the hospital, she lost her life, actually. That's the story of many others who easily can lose their life because of the soldier is, he cannot decide, he cannot judge on the health of and the needs of a person, and his judgment always relates to his mood more than the needs of the person himself. I took the advantage of that. The ambulance was delivering a case, a child who suffers from leukemia, into Jerusalem for a session. At the checkpoint, the soldier stopped us for 45 minutes and then came back and said, you are not allowed to get in. Why? You have no permission. I told him, how come? You cannot do that. We have an appointment. The child is sick. You don't need to examine the child to make sure that he is sick. He was really in bad shape. And his mother was almost crying because she's losing an opportunity. We were turned back. I was thinking at that point of time, I was the father of that child. What I can do? How I can view the action of that soldier who condemned my child to death, actually. The child cannot go on having his treatment. He is going to die eventually because of that. We have to insist on making sure that this freedom of people to move from one place to another is guaranteed. I cannot go spend a day to get the permission while the care doesn't wait hours. The permission, by definition, it's planning. You go, you submit, you have documents, you come again. It's not a telephone call and you get it. It's not guaranteed also. You can submit and don't get the permission. Each time Israel imposes closures or restrictions of movement of people or incident takes place, everything is cancelled and you have to go through the whole system again.
Ambulances are sometimes forced to travel on makeshift, unpaved, winding roads between roadblocks. Ambulance medical teams have also reported that they can be humiliated by the Israeli Defense Forces or IDF soldiers at the checkpoints. And in some cases, they have also been beaten. Palestinian travel is restricted or entirely prohibited on 41 roads and sections of roads throughout the West Bank, covering a total of 700 kilometers of roadway. Another result of the checkpoints is that there has been a drastic drop in Palestinian women who are able to actually give birth in a hospital. Many are now forced to give birth at the checkpoint, at the mercy of the IDF officers. The rate of hospital births has dropped from 95% before the Intifada to less than 50%. The World Health Organization estimates that 61 Palestinian women gave birth at Israeli checkpoints between September 2000 and December 2004. Between 2000 and 2001 alone, 31 pregnant women delivered babies at checkpoints, and 17 of their newborns died during the process. 15 pregnant women were forced to wait up to 2.5 hours at checkpoints in 2004. Later this week, we met with a group of women, part of an organization called Maxom Watch. Maxom is Hebrew for checkpoint or barrier. In response to press reports of abuse of Palestinians at checkpoints, Maxom Watch was formed in January of 2001 by a group of Israeli women. These women document their observations at various checkpoints. There are now more than 400 Israeli women involved in the program throughout Israel. They have a quiet but observant presence at checkpoints that actually tends to calm the situation. Most of the time, like the good Jewish mothers that they are, they remind the young IDF soldiers of their conscience, encourage them to be civil, and to stop humiliating the Palestinians crossing through the checkpoint. This afternoon, we met with Ronnie Jaeger, who is a longtime activist with experience in human rights work in Guatemala and in Mexico. We went to the Abu Dis checkpoint just outside of East Jerusalem. This checkpoint has iron bars separating the soldiers from the civilians, and there was a line about a half a mile long of Palestinian cars waiting to be cleared from the checkpoint. It was an odd scene. These prison-like metallic bars within a concrete checkpoint holding teenagers carrying loaded M16s on a backdrop of magnificent hills where a shepherd was herding his sheep with the beautiful city of Jerusalem in the distance. Along the way, I am still trying to grasp the concept of who is and isn't allowed on certain roads.
Are we on a Israeli-only road right now?
We're in Israel, so
we're still.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
So every road.
Everywhere.
They're all yellow license plates.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, yeah, just a highway in Israel. And if you had the license plates from the West Bank, you couldn't be on this road.
As we approached the checkpoints, we could see that a commotion was already in progress. There was a white van parked by the checkpoint, and I saw a young Palestinian man dressed in a suit and tie with finely polished shoes outside of the checkpoint, vigorously smoking a cigarette in frustration while trying to negotiate with an armed IDF soldier to let him go on his way. A woman in her 40s was next to him. She had on a black formal suit and had her hair done as if she was going somewhere. It turned out that this was a family, a woman and her sons, on their way to their sister's wedding. They were waiting on the other son to be released from the checkpoint. He was handcuffed without his suit jacket and behind metal bars in a pen. One of the soldiers accused him of using force against a soldier and had locked him up without charges indefinitely. Dr. Rothschild explains how Ronnie of Maxim Watch tries to ease the situation by offering help and persuading the IDF soldiers to let the young Palestinian man go to his sister's wedding.
Plus, she's giving the family here information about this. It was Hamoched, Center for the Defense of the Individual, who might be able to provide them with assistance. She's looking really unhappy. Now, the soldier is giving something to his mother, and two soldiers talking to the mother
while her son is handcuffed.
And her son is watching from his pen. It's somewhere between bizarre and outrageous. And this is like daily life here. And people say, oh, the peace process is moving along just fine, right? You know, you got to hope with whatever you got. I can't seem to guess over.
In the middle of negotiating with the soldier on the roadside, the young Palestinian man, not behind bars, approaches us and wants to talk with us to thank us for our support.
Hello, I'm sorry about the situation.
You're sorry, I'm sorry.
All of us sorry, but I will not talk now.
That's
because
okay. Okay.
I didn't want to abstract
sure.
The
no,
problem.
No, 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 no.
But nice to meet you.
I'm Alice Rothschild.
You're welcome. My name
States.
Is Riyad. You can promise me to return back?
I will, I'm coming
all
back.
All of you. I'm living in Geneva. I worked in Nazareth 14 years.
When I ask the Palestinian man whether he will be able to make his sister's wedding, he replies.
She's married now, but you know the problem.
Yeah.
It was your sister?
Now she's married.
Ronnie Jaeger of Maxim Watch explains her involvement in the situation.
I got the commander to say that they were not physically attacked. Okay, so now if we are needed to be witnesses, we say he told us that he didn't, you know, so at least we couldn't do more than that. It's a good sign at least because lots of people know they can't just say, you know, he tried to assassinate a soldier and nobody knows. That is a good example of what we do. We don't change the occupation. But the fact that now they know we write about it, nothing terrible can happen to the guy. While maybe if nobody knew, who knows what could happen.
What is he waiting for now? Why is he sitting over there?
Because the military police is handing him over to the regular civil police.
So there's no way you can make it to the wedding. That's
the wedding is out.
The wedding
that's
married.
Out. Once I went by car and I saw security people attacking a young guy, so I got involved and I went to the police station to witness.
You're almost frustrating.
I'm upset beyond. A thousand things are happening at this very moment.
At every checkpoint.
At every checkpoint.
It's our life.
Our blessing to your sister and her husband.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
One people have dignity and one people have guns.
Yes.
And this man is also a Christian, and he was saying, it's not my fault. I'm not throwing stones. I'm not in the Intifada. I'm not one of them. So there's a bit, he feels sort of like caught in the middle.
Part of our goal in going to Israel and Palestine was to facilitate medical education between Israel, Palestine, and the United States. The Jewish American Medical Project has since sponsored a Palestinian medical student to do rotations at Harvard Medical School and Columbia University Medical School in New York City. I will call this Palestinian medical student Sophia because she wishes to remain nameless. She explains how the occupation affects her medical education.
What if you wanted to do a rotation in Ramallah? You would have to go through a checkpoint every morning?
Yeah. Every morning. I wanted to take a rotation in Nablus because they have a really, really good internist. Like, he's a very good teacher. And so I wanted to go there, but since I have a Jerusalem ID, I cannot go to Nablus. I tried going there once, and they didn't let me in. So I had to come back. So I couldn't go to this rotation, and I had to stay in Jerusalem. Soldiers at the checkpoint told me that you're an Israeli citizen, and I was like, no, I'm not. I don't have a passport. No, you have a Jerusalem ID. So because we care about you, and we don't want you to get hurt, and we don't want to let you in. I was like, okay, I'm responsible for myself. I wanna get hurt. So it's none of your business. You don't have to worry about me. No, this is illegal, you cannot do that. And I tried to go through mountains, and they have donkeys, and you'll walk with the donkey on a mountain in order to go to the other side. But sometimes there will be soldiers there, and they will shoot. So I wanted to take the risk, but then when I was in the middle of the way, I was like, no, suppose I go in and they won't let me out, then I will end up in Nablus, you know, not knowing what to do. I told my friend, okay, so let's go back to Jerusalem.
But do you have to get a permit to come to Hebron?
No, but I will by June. Like, there's a new law they issued. It's like the Arabs in East Jerusalem will not be able to go into areas of the West Bank unless they have permission. I'll have to go to the DCO too, and they will give you a permit to go, but for like, they will give you a permit, for instance, from 7 in the morning to 7 p.m. And it will cost you money. It's not like for free.
Official checkpoints are to be expected, and after a while, you get numb to the experience, unless, of course, you are harassed. I went through the unique experience of impromptu checkpoints set up while I was in East Jerusalem. We were scheduled to visit the medical school in East Jerusalem in the afternoon, but our schedule was halted, and I never did get to visit the grounds of Al-Quds Medical School. We discussed many things on our way to East Jerusalem, including Sophia's views on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
You can see it at the checkpoints. They just do not respect us as humans. It's very humiliating.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate, okay? Because I am completely appalled by checkpoints. Can you imagine being a 20-year-old soldier who's had very little training, who's maybe an immigrant from Russia, who's pretty racist, who's pretty scared, whose only power comes from a gun, and you find yourself at a checkpoint 8-10 hours a day? You're facing a civilian population, you don't understand them, you're afraid someone's going to blow you up at any minute. Can you imagine that person's life experience?
I feel very, very sorry for this person. I really know these facts, know that this person has this background, and how is she or he feeling at this moment, and that's why they see the gun as their only defense. And that's why I really feel sorry for them from the way they treat me at the checkpoint. These teenagers, they get the chance to control me, control my life, but I also feel that it's too bad for them, because someone their age should be doing something better for a life than, you know, standing at a checkpoint and humiliating other people his age or even older than them. I'm used to that because the Israeli government is using them. Why do they bring these people? Why these ignorant people who know nothing, who just know, okay, I have a gun? They are taught that these Palestinians and Muslims are they might be carrying bombs, they are terrorists or whatever, and they will hurt you. And as if like our goal in life is to hurt you. We don't care about you. You're the last thing that comes up to my mind. Okay? For them, we are the first thing. You know, they wake up every morning just feeling scared from me. Well, I don't really care about them. So I really feel sorry for them. It's a pity that they're letting these people use their lives. So, okay, go get a school, go learn something, go, you know, do something better for your life. Palestinians are being looked at by all the rest of the world as Hamas. They don't see the other parties. They don't see the other Palestinians. So this is the only aspect of the Palestinian society that the outer world sees. Okay, we were planning to go to Abu Dis, we were planning to go across the wall, but earlier, like when me and Seema came here, one of the guys told me that the Israeli government received some warning that two Palestinians from Gaza came into Jerusalem and planning to bomb themselves in West Jerusalem. There's an attack.
There's a threat of attack. It hasn't happened.
I don't know if you can depend on that, because they always receive these kinds of, you know, news, and sometimes things just never happen. Anyway, so like he told me that there are many, many checkpoints downtown in the city and around the city. He learned that they also blocked the way to Abu Dis. So now my friend, she will not be able to go home.
So what happens when you can't go home?
I'm going to find a way, you know, not in front of the soldiers, so that they can pass without seeing me.
Like through the hills?
Yeah, maybe.
So how long will that take you?
It always takes a long time. You know, if I want to find another way, it may take 15 minutes, half an hour.
So when you say you pass across the wall, what exactly do you mean?
I mean jumping.
How big is the wall there?
And no, there's a, you know, space near the wall that you can jump. It's 10 meters, the wall, you know. You can jump across it. But
does it scare you more about going home with this? This
no.
is every day.
Yeah, I managed to do it. They may let me stay for hours just until they go. They don't hit girls, you know. They hit boys. Sometimes they do, but they usually hit boys. You know.
Someone's friend's mother is stuck across the wall.
Yeah, Narmin's mother.
Yeah, she's stuck at Abu Dis. She was going to buy something for the house. Suddenly they close all the ways to and from Abu Dis, and she's stuck there.
Even if she has a permit, does she need a?
She has an Israeli ID. And they close for
no
all.
Way to negotiate.
About how long do they close for usually?
It depends on the situation. Sometimes hours.
Does she go stay with friends or go through the
woods? No. In the street.
How often does that happen?
In such conditions, it happens often. No, we are accustomed.
What's the longest that you've been stranded at a checkpoint?
According to the mood of a group of soldiers together in their car, and they just get the mood that they want to make a checkpoint now, and you just suddenly see it in your way, and they are so bad. They may let you just wait for hours. Let's say they don't ask for ID or something. They just stand like this and you can't pass. Okay,
you know,
why?
Especially when you're a girl and they like your
face.
Yeah, they like you and they want to stop you. They have the legality to do this.
So you're stuck here now?
Seems so.
So what are you going to do?
Nothing. Just hope that they will open the gates soon.
You've been listening to a documentary produced by Seema Jalani and co-edited by Dr. Alice Rothschild. This is part one of a special series titled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation. This week, during the local news time slot, you'll hear the series. To hear previous parts of the series, look for the corresponding KPFT news shows when you visit the KPFT audio archives online at archive.kpft.org. I'm KPFT Local News Co-Director, Renee Feltz.